represent the executive interest policy about local work commission on House Bill 3607.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the President, Jack Winter, State Representative 631. Before you is House Bill 3607 amendment. Since this body passed this bill out, the governor had some problems with the language in the bill that passed both House chambers. He and I have met, and we've met with Representative Gardner, myself, and the governor, and Bowie to try to get some language that we could all agree with. And this is the result of the work from all of us in that group. And so we're asking you to approve this amendment at this time.
Oh, you have consensus from the group that worked together on this?
We worked on this morning, the language on this group, which represented both Gardner and Jack Roberts, the commissioner, myself, and the governor's policy advisor, Mark Gibson.
Right.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a dumb procedural question? Why is this still here? My notes say that we passed it in the Senate.
We referred it back to committee on the motion to reconsider.
Why would we have reconsidered the
motion? We recalled it from the governor.
Okay. Get it at the request of the governor.
Oh, okay. Rather than go through that fail door. Okay, I see. I noticed it passed the House and passed the Senate, and here we were.
What happened? So the bill is back before us, and we have the dash one amendment for us. The chair would like to move the dash one amendment.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I'd like to determine once again in the amendment in bold faith, section one, sub two. Now, the penalty for such non-payment may not exceed 100% of the unpaid wages or compensation, and who is making the determination as to what the penalty will be?
Bowie.
Okay. So, depending on how flagrant and the cooperativeness, et cetera, that will determine the amount. Okay. Thank you.
Any questions?
Hey, Mr. Chair. Is that all that's left of the bill now? Is this section one?
Representative Gardner is joining me, and he just advised me that there was conceptual language that he would like to have changed to where it says may not exceed on line 13 to be Shelby.
Yes, I'll move a conceptual amendment to the dash one amendment of House Bill 3607 there on line 13. The word may is changed to shall.
Mr. Chair, if I may return, the intent was on Dan Gardner, State Representative from House District 13. On line 13, the intent was to strike may not exceed and insert the words shall be.
So instead of a variable scale, it's an absolute 100%.
That was from our motion, Chair.
I'm not sure.
Mr. Chair, how does this differ from existing law? Not the Shelby, I got that part. The rest of it, the proposed amendment. How does it differ from existing law? In terms of non-payment.
Under current law, if an employer fails to pay final wages to a former employee, the employer may be required to pay a penalty, and the amount of that penalty may be as much as wages would have been for 38-hour day.
Mr. Chair, Senator, do you want me to go through the bill to see what is different from current law?
No, I think I
did. I mean, I can see where they changed pursuant to under in some of these little pieces. And we would still be deleting the language in Section 3 that says no civil penalty may be assessed for violations of rules.
I think that this is an amendment to the Emerald Bill. Bill has
you, on
I'm Janet Richfield, in the Governmental Affairs Coordinator for Boley. Mr. Chair, I think this is an amendment to the Enrolled Bill, and the Enrolled Bill includes civil penalties for termination wages, which would allow Boley to put a $1,000 fine. Also a civil penalty for minimum wage. Violation.
They didn't give us an enrolled bill.
Can I hand you this that I have?
Sure. If it's in the enrolled bill, that would have to mean that we passed it out of here with that language in it. I don't have any record of that. And this wouldn't be a dash one amendment if we had amended the bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Duke, I think it's a dash one amendment. I don't believe there were any amendments to 3607 before. So these are the first amendments to the original bill.
Well, then the language in Section 3 stays as it is.
Correct.
Correct.
Which says, delete the language that says no civil penalty may be assessed for violations of rules pertaining to the payment of overtime wages.
Could I ask if the conceptual amendment, was that part of the discussion and was that agreed to, or is that something new?
Well, the discussion this morning, you know, was around a conceptual idea, and, you know, the language was not drafted at that point in time, and this is something that came up in discussions afterwards. The understanding was to look at the language and see if there were any concerns, and this was a concern that came out of the language once everybody had seen it.
Could I follow up on that?
Yes.
From your understanding of the discussions, was it that there should be any flexibility for Boley to determine a penalty 100% or less, or was it that 100% was the amount that should be assessed?
Well, my understanding, Senator, Mr. Chair, Senator Wilde, from the discussion this morning is that the 10-day notice could come from Boley, could come from your attorney, could come from an employee, and that there needed to be a disincentive for an employer to habitually do this type of action and not have a penalty of some sort assessed, and we talked about 100% penalty for it.
But the flexibility would rest with Boley.
Right.
Not under the conceptual, but under the existing.
Under the existing.
Mr. Chair, I need to clarify that. Is this the language that Boley wants
yes.
in the bill?
This may not exceed 100%.
Okay. So you want it as it is right now?
That's what I believe, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Well, I would like to move the conceptual. Yes, I would. That's right. I don't think it's right when employers repeatedly, three times, don't pay their employees.
That's true. Under the wording of the bill, I would certainly expect Foley, if they saw an employer repeatedly not pay employees, to charge the full amount available.
Well, the employees wouldn't. I don't. That's anything.
Chair Starr.
Yes.
Senator Shannon. I'm Janet Winfield.
Janet Winfield from where?
From Boley.
Okay.
Bureau of Labor and Industry. Currently, the process is in the current law. Boley gets a filing. They then send a letter to the employer. They normally give about 10 days for the employer to respond. If there's no response, then they do an investigation. If the investigation shows that the employer is guilty of not paying termination wages, then Boley will ask them once again to pay the termination wages. If they do not do that, then they send out an order of determination in which they will charge the employer the full amount of the termination wages in addition to the penalty wages, which normally by then is about 30 days, so it would be a 30-day penalty wage.
Got a question?
Yes.
If the employer chooses not to pay that, what happens? Are there license at risk?
The employer can litigate on that, but there is no civil penalty at the moment. So what Boley is expecting them to give is the full penalty. They're charging the full penalty of the penalty wage.
Yeah, I didn't ask my question. If the employer chooses not to make it right, then what happens? Does the employee, the former employee, have to sue themselves, or does Boley have a hammer?
Boley does not have a civil penalty to provide. I'm not sure what goes on beyond that. Normally they do get the employer to pay at that point.
Well, and I'm not asking about a civil penalty. I'm asking about an employee that says, nothing happens to me, why should I pay?
Oh, the employer? Well, I'm sure they can take them to court and get something out of them.
Because I helped an employee that was injured, and Boley just said, here, we've done the research, you take it to court, and Boley didn't, you know, go after the employer.
I don't know about that case, so I can't really respond to that.
If you do litigate?
I believe we do, yes.
Rarely.
I think a majority of the cases, Senator Shannon and Sheriff Starr, are they get an answer before, once they've gone through the investigation, or even before that, they attempt in the beginning to get the money from the employer right up front, and they have quite a bit of success from that and beyond that. And you know, going through the process, they do get most of it to get them to pay before there is even a penalty.
May I ask our friend Winter, she's an employer, how that works if you choose not to do what Boley is required of you?
Never chose not to pay, so I wouldn't know how it works. But for those employers in this particular bill, Section 3, which we retained in there, it does give Boley the ability to assess a civil penalty. It's $1,000 penalty that we added to this bill for individuals who willfully violate that section, and that was done deliberately to get at those individuals that you're talking about. What section that we're trying to address in Section 1 of this bill are those employers who aren't deliberately trying not to pay their employees, but because of not having this window that we have a situation where we have now, attorneys trolling Boley and getting those names and then driving the cost up. And so this 10 days is trying to deal with that, so that if you receive a notice from that says that you owe $20, for example, in wages, the employer did have a time to respond to that inquiry. Currently what happens, that doesn't necessarily occur. And so it was an attempt to provide an equity between the employee and the employer.
Now, and that was not my, it was a great answer, but it wasn't. My question again is, what's the hammer? I mean, can they go after their license? Can they do something else?
Well, the $1,000 civil penalty.
That would be under the new law.
Okay.
And that's provided for in 3607. Currently, okay. They would not be able to do that.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? Senator Duke. It's time to figure this out. Fairly simple question. This is an employer who willfully does not pay their employees. Why would we be cutting them a break?
Well, the $1,000 penalty in Section 3 is the willful statute, the willful one. The Section 1 deals with the individual who is, whether it's clerical error or an accounting error, that really isn't willful.
Nope. It says if an employer willfully fails to pay any wages or compensation, and then it keeps going on down the 8 hours a day are until paid and therefore is commenced. However, in no cases shall they go on more than 30 days and if the employer pays the full amount. So they will, to my way of reading this, they willfully didn't pay and then they got costs and now they're going to pay up.
Well, the courts define that willful is the fact that it wasn't paid. Doesn't matter whether it was an accounting error or whatever. That's been the definition.
But this also works for those people who intentionally choose not to pay. And if you're making $50 a day and they didn't pay it, and it can go on for 10 days, under the existing statute, you're going to get $500.
They would get $1,000.
Chair Star.
They would get $1,000. It's doubled.
And under yours, they're going to get $100.
No, if it was $50 a day and it was 10 days, it would come out to $1,000. 100% of what sold.
Up to 100%.
May not exceed 100% of the unpaid wages or compensation. I mean, they've got to be saving something or there wouldn't be any point in doing this.
Chair Starr, since you do, I think our definition of willful in our rules is that you are held accountable to know what the law is, and some people do not know that they're required to provide termination wages at the end of that pay period once the employee.
What about the people who do know it and choose not to pay? We had testimony about there's a particular problem with migrant workers who then move out of the area. And in order to pursue their claims, have to come back into the area. So if they've got to go through all that, why do I want to reduce the penalty?
Well, we have also, one thing we don't have yet is a civil penalty, and this would be allowed to do that.
Yeah, the bill does say you can have a civil penalty.
But also, what is written in the amendment would encourage the employer to pay, that it would pay, it would be to the employer's advantage to pay within the 10 days rather than stalling on it. So it's more of an encouragement to do it rather than a stick.
We have any further questions?
Sure, I'm willing to move this. I'll move the dash one amendments to House Bill 3607.
Senator Tarnow has moved the dash one amendments to House Bill 3607. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair,
that's as conceptually amended.
Well, that's not as conceptually amended.
But, well, actually, we do it here. What do they do? I believe that Representative Winters and I
are both agreed
in asking for the conceptual amendment, Mr. Chair, if that's all right with the committee.
Yeah. Well.
Mr. Chair, I will withdraw my motion. I'll just withdraw my last motion.
Oh, that motion. Then we'll still have your other motion on the table.
You withdrew it and I did.
Wait a minute.
You look better for Shannon has moved a conceptually amend the Dash 1 amendments by striking on line 13, may not exceed, and substituting shall be in its place. Discussion? Objection?
I don't want the consent. I'm sorry.
That's your fault.
We don't want the consent.
I know.
Yeah.
That's fine, but I
might consent. I just talked to Bowley. That's not a good idea.
Okay. All right. We have a conceptual amendment before us.
Just a second. Do you withdraw the, you don't want it?
I believe we're now in disagreement. I'd rather it not be withdrawn myself.
Can you explain why you don't want it? Chair Starr, Senator Shannon, the non-payment shall be 100%. Currently, we work very hard to get employers to pay the fine. And we don't pay the termination wages, the wages due. And we do not inflict a fine until we get to the order of determination. So our motivation is to get the employers to pay the termination wages. And we do not do a penalty until we get to the actual determination after the investigation.
Thank you, Chair.
Senator Duke.
I bet this will help them understand what the laws are.
Oh, well.
They just sort of figured a business ought to know what the laws are that they're governed by,
mm-hmm.
especially as it relates to hiring other people if they want to be in business.
Okay, nice to say speak our motion.
Okay. Yes,
mm-hmm.
would you?
Okay, but this is only if you do. A penalty, it shall not. I would think that it would strengthen your hand because you can't go, well, you don't have to do this much, but you shall not exceed it. I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure.
I think it's. There's a doubt of there. It's LP 100.
Yeah, see, they took the seat out of that.
It would shall be.
Oh, you took out not exceed.
Right.
Yeah, see, that's what created the problem.
Yeah. If that's 100%, not more.
Well, my motion was just made to shell.
Uh-oh.
Well,
that's better.
I don't know.
That's what your original motion was. So you two agree. Yeah.
Well, and it doesn't say that you have to do the penalty. And if you do it,
if you make it shall be,
it may not exceed 100%.
It may not exceed 100%.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but it doesn't say you have to level the penalty, does it?
The shall be language would say that it would have to be 100%.
Yes. If you had a penalty.
If you had
a penalty, that's
right.
Well, the if isn't there. The shall makes it automatic. If the if isn't there.
Chair Starr, Senator Shannon, I believe the amendment is saying that if the employer pays the wages, okay, the employee files, the employer, once they're contacted by Bowley, if the employer pays within 10 days, they will still be leveled a fine. And that will be it will be 100% of the amount due. So in other words, the employee would get twice as much.
Would pay twice.
We have before us.
She
withdrew her motion, Mr. Chair.
I think she withdrew her motion.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3607.
Senator Tarnow has moved the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3607. Is there further discussion? Clerk call roll.
No.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Senator Tarnow?
Aye.
Senator Wilde?
Aye.
I received necessary majority. House Bill 3607 amended is moved to court to pass recommendation.
Oh, no, no, I think that's a very bad idea. No, I think would make an excellent chair. You feel very strong.
The chair will carry.
This is easy.
It's getting too late. Open that work session on House Bill 2648. Senator, the Representative Simmons.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, members of the committee. I have some dash B12 amendments to House Bill 2648 for your consideration today. And this ties into a bill that you passed with some amendments for the Farm Bureau. I think it was 2938 or something like that a couple days ago. It went across the House floor today. We concurred. And sections 1 and 2 of these B12 amendments are the language from Senate Bill 961 that requires reimbursement of attorney fees in cases where an individual gets sued by a state agency, wins, and then the state agency appeals, and if the individual wins again, the state agency would have to reimburse their attorney fees. But I would request that because there's been agreement to do an interim study on the reimbursement of attorney fees issues, that sections 1 and 2 of the B12 amendments be struck. And then that leaves sections 3 through 4, and that is the language that was in the 2938, I believe, that has been agreed to. The language in 2938 was basically a prohibition on Chinese providing further road and engineering, road bridge engineering for free to counties. It's a statute that's about 50 years old, and it's high time we took another look at that, I believe. And so this, what we have here, is a compromise with the counties. They would go back and provide that those counties who have the bottom 30% of counties that, that by the equivalent road mile calculation as defined in ORS 366.541 would still be eligible for those free bridge design services from ODOT. And that would be on page 3 of the dash B12 amendments on lines the bolded print at the bottom there, 2931.
Questions here?
Mr. Duke?
What's the reason for the language on page 3? It's just 930, the counties whose resources are less than 30% of the average for all counties. Why are we just doing this for some counties?
Yeah, some of these counties, their equivalent road mile funds are down to as low as $1,200 for equivalent road mile, $1,500 for equivalent road mile. The average statewide is, I believe, $16,372 for equivalent road mile. That's the funds that are available to the county for equivalent road for road maintenance and repair work. And if you 30% is $4,912 per equivalent road mile in county funds, and those counties are the poorest of the poor in the counties, and we thought it would be appropriate to provide some exceptions for those poorest of the poor.
Right now we're doing it for all of them, aren't we?
only per request. Sometimes it's used, sometimes it's not. And it was put on the books some years ago when there were no engineering firms out in rural Oregon to do the engineering work, and now I believe it's appropriate that we begin to readdress that because we are, in effect, exporting good-paying engineering jobs that could be provided by the private sector to Salem. And many times those are contracted out of the state even to when ODOT's engineers have a full book of work, a lot of that gets sent out of state. And I think it would be appropriate to encourage more, keeping that work in state and reduce the amount of government competition here with the private sector.
So we're only going to do this in counties who have chosen not to pass road levies to cover the costs of their roads?
I don't know that...
Will that going to help?
There hasn't been a road levy in Union County. A lot of these counties have depended upon timber receipts, and those have gone away. There have been no owl receipts in many of these counties in rural eastern Oregon. Most of these counties are eastern counties. But they've got all about that misdependency.
My county did a tax break and a separate road district to cover its roads. And so now are you telling me that other counties didn't want to pay like that, so the state shifted? But the ones who did choose to increase their revenues themselves through taxes shouldn't get help?
No, what we're saying here is that the poorest of the poor still have an option, and they've all had this option for 50 years.
Mm-hmm. But now you're going to take it away from some of them.
Oh, we've already taken it away.
We've already taken it away. Now we're giving it back to some of them. That's what we've done. In 2938, we took it away from all of them. And now what we're doing is giving it back to the bottom poorest of the poor in among counties in the equivalent road mile fund.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, to respond to your question about the road levy.
Your name on the record.
Well, thank you. For the record, my name is Bill Penhollow, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. The only way I could respond to your question is that Clatsop County had the good fortune of requesting its tax base and road levy, as did Malheur County, which is one of the counties here that would be continuing under this program prior to Measure 5 and Measure 47. And so that levying authority has been rolled up, and they still have the ability to levy. Many of these counties, because of compression, are not in a position where they can ask for a road levy. Plus, they have lost $25 million in federal timber revenues as a result of the current administration's timber harvest policy and the fact that there was no special federal legislation to guarantee a gradual decline in those revenues. So they have... some of those counties have lost as much as 90% of those timber revenues, and so we have attempted to work with Representative Simmons and try to preserve this program at least for the very, what we would consider the very poorest of poor counties, and we use this equivalent dollars per equivalent road mile as a way of probably the best way of trying to determine dollars available for expenditure. And what we do is take all state and federal dollars dedicated for roads, divide that by the number of arterial and collector miles, not their total road system, but their principal road system, and come up with this dollars per equivalent road mile factor that we use to allocate, as you may recall, the special county program allocates resources to those counties using that factor, and we suggested to Representative Simmons that we use this factor to apply to this law. I would want to say that we would like to have it higher than 30%, but we have worked with Representative Simmons, he started out lower than 30%, and we started out higher, and we've come to 30%, and that's what we've agreed upon, trying to restore this for at least some of the counties.
Yeah, I'll probably end up voting for it, but I can make a really good case. He's right. you're already getting small county allotment right off the top that comes out of every other county's road fund money. And now to take it away from other counties in one session and then turn around and put it back with certain counties that chose not, I mean, who have had more than everybody else has had for years and therefore have paid some roads that other counties would not have paid. Therefore, have higher costs per road mile, less money per road mile, is a catch.
I understand the situation to be a little different than that in the intent originally was to provide for private engineers to have a background doing the work for local engineers under the without financing of those projects for those that engineering the local private engineers in those hands. And this was really an attempt to bring private industry or private individuals into the formula. We decided that maybe the size of the contract had not felt large enough to justify that to the smallest bodies. And so we've made a compromise here saying, well, we want some trade-offs for our local civil engineers or whatever. But I think that it's a good trade-off. Personally, I think that we need to encourage our local private citizens in business.
And there's no reason to believe that to put in this language back to some of the counties will get any private contract there. You get the private contract within the larger, more populous.
That's sure we're not going back to 100%. So we're leaving that other for the engineering.
It's really just helping these folks come up with this, just so you understand. It may be some good reasons for it, but that's what they're doing.
Well, they've been doing it.
But everybody's been doing it. If
even in double dipping, their revenues are the top, the eight counties that this would apply to, their revenues were only $4,000, $3,990 per equivalent road mile. If they're double dipping, I don't begrudge them that. If that's all the money they have. $3,990. And they could be as high as $4,912 per equivalent road mile. With an average statewide of $16,372 per equivalent road mile.
How much is it? $16,372
is the current average for all counties statewide. And these counties that we are going to still allow them to use this service from ODOT would have less than $4,912 per equivalent road mile. And currently, the top one of them is at $3,990. And it goes down to $1,565 per equivalent road mile. So even if they're double dipping to achieve that kind of funding, I don't begrudge them that personally, because they are strapped.
Do you know what cost you service?
I don't know what it costs to resurface, but I do know that in some of the counties, paved roads are being ripped up and returned to gravel. Because they just don't have the money.
Wait, I had a question.
Further question?
The boy, I'll come
back.
Okay. Okay, well, my question is that on page 3 of the amendment, which is upon request of the county governing and assist. Is this the law now, then?
Yes. That's current language.
Okay, can you just explain something to me? And that is, go back up into page line 9 on page 3. Investigate, determine the methods of road construction best adapted. So are the counties able to choose then those? The reason I'm asking this question is I have been working with a man that has a system of roads to make roads that cost half as much and last twice as long, but ODOT refuses to do it. So he could go to the county and get use that method?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, if you'll go to page 2, the beginning of that section, line 26, you will see that this says the Department of Transportation shall, among other things. So this is directing the department to do what they provide in coming down to investigate and determine the methods of road construction best adaptable. That's a directive to the Department of Transportation. I don't know that there's a parallel provision in Chapter 368 which deals with county roads, but I know that county officials are all the time looking for ways to reduce the cost of improving and maintaining and surfacing roads, because we do have a huge, huge unmet need on the county road system. As Representative Simmons indicates, many of our counties are not able to maintain their surface roads, and they've become so potholed that they've had to go in and actually rip them up and return them to gravel services. So then
ODOT does not have to approve the system that a county uses to build a road. And I'm not talking about return to gravel, because that was these people's understanding that it had to have ODOT approval. And this is the first place where I've seen in the law that they are supposed to, as far as, you know, compile statistics. Because when we talk to ODOT, there's only one way they want to build roads, McAdam or something like that system. And I didn't even know they had any charge to look at different ways.
Well, Senator Shannon, it could be that you dig into this. You might find something here that would interest you. You might find something here that would interest you if it would appear that they have not broadened their horizons as much as they might otherwise.
Senator, I mean, Representative all Simmons, all your bills interest me. And I'd like to know how our bill's doing over there. You close down for the day.
But after we're done here, I'll let you know. I wouldn't want anything I have to say to affect how you may vote on this amendment one way or another.
Okay.
Can we move the conceptual amendment to the...
Okay, one thing before we do, Mr. Chair. There's a little funny to not the only ones going back to gravel.
Yeah. True.
Right. Washington County is going back to gravel. And they won't fall under this.
No.
And gravel is just an equivalent from crowd.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Am I to assume that this is a total gut stuff, with no portion of the original bill being
that is correct?
That is
correct.
Well, that was my understanding.
Well,
it
is.
Well, that is
more. We're even amending the relating clause.
What?
We're even amending the relating
clause. Who gave permission for that? I was denied permission.
Well,
to
one point after that.
Wait a minute.
We're not amending the relating clause.
Line 2.
Everything, Mr. Chair, if I may, everything after the semicolon is changeable, but everything before the semicolon, at least for the House, is not. And this is relating to state agencies, I believe.
We don't have a semicolon. We have a period.
Well, I can't go for amending the relating clause.
Well, my question, Mr. Chair, is what happened to the language in the B.M. Gross version of House Bill 2648? Is that no longer, or is that no longer
that
we discussed?
Well, we've had substantial discussion about that, and
you not vote. I have to vote.
We have a dilemma. Perhaps our city administrator can tell you what the dilemma is.
Mr. Chair, members, first, we're not amending the relating clause in line 2, but we're just adding an explanation to talk about creating new provisions and what we'll be amending and what we're repealing. But we're not amending the subject matter of the relating clause. The relating clause will stay the same relating to state agencies. I spoke with Greg Chamoff earlier today, and if we would include the lobbyist provision, that's section 2 and 3 of the bill, And if we would add in the provisions about the road maintenance and the dollars that we just heard testimony on, he was of the opinion that these were unrelated subjects. And because of the fact that we have to have a single subject for bill, and he was advised against that. The relating clause of state agencies, though, is proper for either of these.
Maryland,
exactly.
I think that's right. Now,
I have a question down here. Yes. So how did they manage to do animal fur and face healing over the house?
Good.
In the same bill.
Right. They did.
Yeah. Do you remember? It's not.
Relating to crime, and we decided that it fit, and we sent it to the floor, and now it's on its way to the Senate.
And we decide this fits, and I like the original bill.
Well, you.
I want it.
Nice.
I like both of them.
Yes, I do too.
We, need a coffer. We need a coffer.
No, we need
let me say that,
Mr. Chair,
I was involved with the chair of.
I need to be excused to go to. Yeah, I'll defer to you.
Thank
you. If you're there, and.
Are you still in meeting?
The floor is in session, and I have to run rules on the outside.
You have a closed rule, so.
No, I haven't.
Okay. Our bill hasn't come up yet.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to take a brief recess. Okay.